Chicken and a cold beer on a warm day. Some way I gotta make it happen, cause a dollar is worth nothing if you ain't got more to stack it in. Some say the facts don't lie, well my pockets are empty, my stomach's rumbling and my mouth is dry. Some say others pass by, but it's the ones that pass away that make us wanna stay alive. And so I say I cannot die, not why people rely on me to provide. And yes, I may stray from time to time, but my past always brought me back around to see the brighter side. I pray rainy days will stay away, because my umbrella is broken and the sunshine never stays. And so I lay my heart into every line, because without emotion I'm promoting nothing but these rhymes.
I know it's hard for you. You've been trying to make it right. I know it's hard for you.
Somber from the things that we've all been exposed to. Supposed to be searching for something we never really find. So we hustle and grind, trying to make it feel the time. I find the more you try, the more you fail. So either cry better to step off stage and give them hell. And mama, I know you're crying cause I'm out of my own. I can hear it in your voice when I'm calling you on the phone. But I'm not alone, trust me. Know that I got a home. And yes, my girl left, but my heart will never be stone. So miss me, but please don't cry for me. When we get rich, you're gonna see how life can be. So let's rewind to a time when things were okay. Don't know I can make it happen, but I'll do what it takes. And know that I will always appreciate what you did for me. So keep looking forward to someday.
I know it's hard for you. You've been trying to make it right. I know it's hard for you.
Buddy, I think change witness and power and extreme. My damn name's just for now. I'm getting paid big change, water and hollow. Buddy, change lanes. Everybody trying to say that I couldn't make it this far. When it's on me at the bar, what you looking at me for? I hope the sky, cause you found a star. You live for today, I live for tomorrow. For all time is the way we living. Large shine is what I'm delivering. Hard times we living, so my cash is hard pressed. In between the mattress is hidden, so I can guard at my best. So that one day, someday, we can survive like the rest.
I know it's hard for you. You've been trying to make it right. I know it's hard for you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. Tonight's guest is Meshorn Daniels. He has his own show called The Focus Show, and we're going to be talking a lot about race and racial relations. But before we get to that, quickly, for you guys who tuned in last night for the Liberty Unbridled show with Ken Molman, apparently there were some Blog Talk-related problems. The show did not get started on time at 7 o'clock. So Ken was able to get the show fired up at 7:30, worked out all the problems. So you can listen to the podcast of that show. Just go to our website at LouisvillePolitics.com, and you can listen to the podcast of that show. He has a hell of a following, and I want to make sure everybody knows about that. You know, secondly, Vice President, Libertarian Vice Presidential Candidate Jim Gray made it to Mount Washington today. Why is this great for us? Well, I'll tell you why. Because my partner, Ed Martin, who was chosen for Jim Gray to visit, small business owner. So Ed's not with us yet. Don't know why. He'll get here in a little while, I'm sure, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. Because I'm kind of curious to see what Ed's reaction was to what Jim Gray had to say this morning. Okay, on to business. Meshorn Daniels, how are you, my friend?
Blessed and highly favored, buddy. How you doing, Ed?
If I was any better, it'd be sinful. The wife doesn't let me sin, so, you know, that kind of creates a problem for me. But, you know, what the heck? We'll get there, I guess.
It's all good, man.
Oh, I hear you, brother. I tell you, why don't you do me a favor? Real quick, let me tell everybody. Calling numbers, as always, 858-683-1326. or in Louisville, 502-805-0334, if you want to be heard on a program. For you guys who are listening in the queue, and we always have 15 or 20 that are there, most of you guys will recognize the number so you know the game, but for those of you who don't, press the little one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. I don't run every mic open all the time throughout the show, so if you want to be heard, you got a point to make, press your little one and we will get you on air. Me, Sean, why don't you do us a favor? Give us a little background, man. What's it all about?
All right, man. Well, first of all, Ed, I want to thank you for having the courage, the being a man, and having this show that you would invite me on and have a discussion about race. So I want to thank you and give you props for that and everything, because I think it's so very important that our country and we as men need to have this discussion. So thank you for that, man. Who am I? Well, I was born in 1961 in Miami, Florida. Born to my mother and my father, who made a decision to have me. Well, actually, my mother made a decision to have me. My father didn't want to have me, but my mother decided to have me anyway. And then growing up in Miami in the 60s, that means if I was born in 1961, I'm a baby boomer in the middle. And for those who don't understand what it is being a baby boomer in the middle, that means that I'm the last. Those who are between the 48 to 55, I'm the last of the baby boomer generation born in that era of baby boomers. And so and I don't come here speaking as a black and African American. I've come to realize that I'm a descendant of American slaves. So that will be the topic of where I speak from, because there's a big difference between being born black and African American. But originally, I was born black and African American in Miami, Florida. My mother made a decision because of the trials and tribulations that was going on in my life. She made a decision to have me put into the military because there was no males, no men, no father in my life to teach me and show me how to be a man. In my own culture, you know, one of the biggest things I always said that know your beginnings. I'm very comfortable with my beginnings, Ed, that my beginnings didn't start off being very positive. There was no one to show me how to be a man in my community, no father. So my mother decided, and this is how you set me up, I'm sending you away to the military to teach you how to be a man. So at the age of 17, I left Miami and went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and joined the military. And the process of a male becoming a man is where I began, and I believe that's the whole story of who I'm about. I got a blog talk radio talk called The Focus Show. I do that because of the fact is I focus on men being men. I've been married now for 17 years. I have two children. One I adopted, my stepson, who I came in his life at 17, both of my children. One has finished college at Duke University. He graduated from there, practicing attorney. And I have a daughter who's now getting ready to finish college at Western Kentucky. She's going to be a teacher. I say I'm age 50 and I'm not a grandfather. So I think I've done something good there by teaching my kids how to handle their business and not get caught up in all the things everybody else engaged them in. So that's a little bit about me. I mean, I can go on and on and on, but I just want to give a little a preview about the importance of where I'm going to come from and where I'm speaking from. And as I wrap this up about who I am, I want to say this right up front. If we're going to talk about race and we're going to talk about racism, then I must say right up front is that Meshawn Daniels has navigated himself through the racist society that we have lived in, that I was born into, to become the free man that I am today. Now, I'm not denying that there's not race and it's not racism out there. Oh, truly, it is. But I've navigated myself to be a free man, to deal with it, to confront it, and to make things happen in my life to be the man that I am today. And so, Ed, that's the intro that I wanted to start off with, that I've navigated through the racist society that I was born into to be the free man that I am today.
Well, I appreciate you being here. And I want to let people know, too, I mean, you know, one of the reasons I think this is so important, you know, as you focus on your show, you focus on a man becoming a man and being a man, standing up to his responsibilities, doing the right thing by his family, and the different things that we typically think of as being manly, you know. But part of that is the ability. In order to be a man, you've got to be able to overcome, you know, whatever you perceive to be obstacles in your path that's hurting your family or yourself going forward. You know, we were having a racial discussion on your show the other day, and I tuned in, and we were able to talk about it. And I kind of wanted to carry that forward tonight, you know, and that's the whole purpose of the show, because we have to be able to talk rationally and communicate rationally. I mean, one of the things that I notice whenever you bring up the topic of race or racism is everybody gets heated. Everybody gets heated.
Oh, my God.
They
yes,
all
want to
scream and yell, and it's always somebody else's fault. And it doesn't matter whether you're black or whether you're white. We all have somebody to blame, you know, on both sides of the equation. But it's interesting to me because from my experience, from my personal experience, you know, and I was brought up, you know, around black family and African American. I mean, half of my family, you know, are African American. You know, my family has an interracial marriage. So I was able to see both sides of the coin growing up. And what I found more often than not is when you talk about racism, you're not talking in most cases about something that is predominantly interracial, where all the whites hate the black people, or all the black people hate the white people. What you typically have is intraracial. And that's a clear distinction because...
I want to jump in there because it's so very important. If we're going to talk about racism, we're going to keep it real, okay, and keep it straight up. As I stated earlier, I said I navigated, okay, through the racist society that I was born into. Mm-hmm. So the fact of the matter is that we cannot deny the fact that America, okay, had a policy of racist policies, okay? So we gotta acknowledge and accept that, okay? And
well,
then
I,
through
no,
the
No. Let me clarify.
No, hold up. If I'm the guest, let me lay my format and we can come back and talk about it. Okay. You know, we have to acknowledge, okay, and I'm a descendant of American slave and born into a racist society, okay, that I have navigated to become the man that I am today. Now, that means it that had I not learned how to overcome certain things that was before me, I wouldn't be able to speak and be comfortable. See, I don't speak as a, you know, you say black, and most blacks and African Americans who speak about race, they can't even have an intellectual, confident conversation and talk about it because they get angry and mad because they haven't overcome it. So you use the word overcome. To overcome something means it doesn't succumb you anymore. It's not something that you bothered by anymore. Say, that's how I speak. But how did I get there? I cannot deny that I was born into that because I look back at my beginnings. My mother, who taught me how to hate and taught me how to dislike the white side of America because of what they were going through. My mother, seeing her mother grow up, being a maid, working in the Nelson's house, okay, mm-hmm. all her life. She seen her father whipped, okay. She literally saw her mother, her father whipped and mistreated. So my mother passed on to me the things that she had not yet overcame. Ed, do you feel what I'm saying? So that is very important that you understand that when you talk and communicate with individuals about race, you need to understand where they came from and what they understood. What I've come to realize, and keep this real, Ed, most of American European males and females have no real reality of what it is to be treated on the other side of race when you're totally picked on, mistreated, and misunderstood solely because of the color of your skin. And that's a true reality because most American Europeans have privileges just because of the color of their skin. They come born into a privileged society. When you're born with the color of the skin that's different from the dominating or, the majority dominant society that we're born into, you're not privileged. You have to earn to be seen. It's like the movie Avatar. You know, I love that movie Avatar. Do you see me? We have to work hard to be seen, to make sure that we reckon with seriously. But how do you deal with it? Most blacks, most African Americans get sidetracked because of the anger, the hurt, the pain. I know that because I was there.
But let's look at the reality.
First of all, let's get some understanding. Do you agree that America, because we've got to make sure we understand, what is race? Race is the belief that is more than one.
Me, Sean, hang on a second.
Am I right or wrong?
No, let me put this out there, okay? Because here's what I believe. I believe that, yes, there was institutional racism in America.
Okay.
Yes, I believe that. But it does not, in my opinion, based on the evidence, based on the research, based on the history, and you know how thorough I am with that, this is not the situation today. What we have today, in my opinion, are a lot of the baby boomers that you mentioned at the top of your introduction are trying to teach racism to the young people who haven't had to stay, haven't had to go through the struggles you went through.
But here's why I disagree with you that, because, see, you got to first acknowledge that it would be totally different if America had set, when we say Lincoln set blacks free through the emancipation. Come on, bro. It'd be different if we had an immigration or a naturalization of the slaves brought into America, and they learned exactly what they were let loose into. We have not. Now, let's keep this thing real, Ed. Let's talk. We men here, okay?
I'm very real, Misha.
If that's the case, if we truly understood that blacks, okay, are slaves. Let's be slaves. And I get tired of using color. Slaves were let loose into this country with no naturalization into what they was let loose into. That means over a few decades or so, they've been trying to find their way. And the parent culture, who responsibility to ensure...
Well, see, wait a minute.
Whose responsibility is it to make sure that if you let people into your reality, okay, if you into your society, into your network, whose responsibility to make sure that they at least know exactly what they're going to do? Can you honestly say that America, the parent culture of America, set slaves into their reality that they're dealing with, and still today, we still, because of that lack of preparing people to know exactly what they're going into, can you honestly say that we're not experiencing the same reflection of that today?
If you're talking about a reflection of it, yes, but for entirely different reasons.
You can't say yes to that, Ed, and then not agree with all the things that make that up. Am I right or wrong?
When you talk about slavery, slavery is not color. Slavery is colorblind, in my opinion, today.
We're talking about in America.
All right. I know you're talking about slavery in America, and slavery in America is colorblind. The real slavery in America today is self-inflicted by each and every one of us. Because we continue to enslave ourselves, whether it's through poverty, whether it's through expecting Uncle Sam to take care of us. You know, there's a whole host of reasons.
You're talking around. If we're going to talk about race, okay, you can't jump from back then and jump into now without understanding the process of what get people to where they are. Now, I'm in agreement. Don't get me wrong. I'm in agreement that the victim mentality is surely. It's surely rampant high in the 21st century because you have too many people who have decided to take the victimhood mentality instead of owning up. Now, what did I say earlier? I navigated through the racist society that I was born in. I said that for a reason. That means, Ed, that first of all, me showing and people like myself, I'm not unique by myself. There's a tremendous amount of other articulate men of descendants of slaves, black African-Americans who may call themselves black and African-American, who can articulate and understand, but they don't need someone to give them the yes of who I am. I know what I went through. I know what made me who I am today. So I don't even need you to agree with it, Ed. I know why
I've
I'm
got
free.
No
and I don't
intention
need...
of it. My point is this, though. My point is this, all right? And here's the reality of the situation. What you went through the 60s as a baby boomer, you know, and learning about civil rights and Martin Luther King and all the other stuff that went with it, you know, nobody can compare it to. So when you bring something to the plate, you bring it from a position of experience. Okay?
Exactly.
Now, here's the thing for me, because the children of the 80s and up, you know, these are all in their 30s now.
Right,
are the same people out there who are talking about this fight and this struggle that they never went through.
Yeah, but who fought? And that's where now you and I are talking about something, because, see, we already acknowledge that race, the belief of believing that there's more than one race, okay, is an error. There's only one human race.
Well, Sean, let's call it what it is. Yeah, the human race. I mean, that's exactly
right. And so racism is the practice of the belief that one race or is dominant over the other to make one feel less than or to empower your will over somebody else. That's the practice of racism. So I ask you, okay, you know, I'm 52 years old, 51, about to turn 52, all right? Now, one of the biggest things I've come to realize when I joined in the military, and this is why I like using the stories from the biblical story about Joseph that was sold into slavery. I kind of relate to that because I understand that. Because what I went through in the military, man, I had a Sergeant Squeaky. I think you heard me tell my story about Sergeant Squeaky.
Yes, I have.
I had all this hatred coming from my home, coming from where I came from. It was Sergeant Squeaky, the European Christian man that took me to my side, and he revealed something about myself that I didn't realize. And he said to me, Private Floyd, he said, there's only one human race, okay? Unfortunately, let me apologize for, he said, and this is one of the key things that I think I'm trying to get people to understand. Our country, or the American, European culture that has been put in place, didn't do what Sergeant Squeaky did for me, Sean, all singular, all by myself. He revealed to me about something my parents couldn't do, because broken people who's walking in the broken spirit, broken mentality, lack of knowledge, not knowing who they are, can't restore you or teach you what freedom is. Only people who's walking in freedom, people who understand what freedom is and everything, can't restore or tell people or teach people what that is. Now, I'm going to keep it real. Sergeant Squeaky did that for me. He said to me clearly, he said, first of all, there's only one human race, and we're God created, okay, one human race. He said to me, then he went on and said, let me, he didn't go blaming it. He said, let me right off the bat apologize for the behavior of my ancestors to your culture of people. He didn't make no excuses for it. He said it clear. He said, let me apologize to you right now, okay, because the pain and everything that you're feeling from your parents and everything is not yours. It's not yours to hold on to. You cannot enjoy life. You cannot do what God has called you to do, holding on to something that is not yours, okay? Who said that first? Martin Luther King said that until the former slave owners, descendants of slave owners and descendants of slaves, sit down in brotherhood and to be able to sit down in brotherhood and become one, that will not happen. Well, he was doing that with me. He was showing me I'm a descendant of that nonsense that took place. Let me apologize to you for that right now. It's not yours. Then we did the next thing. I free you. This is the words he said. I free you from the hurt and pain of hatred this country brought upon you. It is not yours. Go be what God has called you to be. Let me tell you something. I remember that because it was the turning point in my life, Ed. It was the turning point in my life that helped me to realize that he made it very clear to me that we were one, human beings created in a creator. And he made it very clear. He didn't make no apologies. He didn't get into all the policies. They didn't get caught up. He clearly stated our country was practicing false reality, false. They took something, their best intentions was wrong, and they erred. They were wrong. Let me apologize. And then he sent me out. And I remember that. He sent me out and said, go be the best soldier in the United States Army that you can be and take back your working. I mean, he told me to go in my country and be the best man that I can be in everywhere I go. Now, what part of that you don't understand, Ed? Do that make sense?
There's no part of that I don't understand, Bishorn, and that's the whole point. That's the whole point. I mean, you had somebody that was able to let you realize that being a man is taking control of your life and not being held to other people's standards of it. Let's go to the phones. We're going to run blind here, folks. Caller 439, you are on the air.
How you doing, Ed?
Doing good. Who is this?
This is Goldie.
Hey, Goldie, how are you, man?
Goldie?
I didn't recognize your voice. You weren't yelling,
what's going
man.
On?
Goldie? Hold on, no, Goldie?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. The abuse that I've taken from you today, bro.
Hey,
I'm
now,
shocked.
Now. We're going to be nice on this
show.
Go
ahead.
Goldie,
yeah, we're going to leave that abuse off the airways.
Okay.
Now, what I would like to hear from Ed is I'd like to hear from a white man's perspective how you feel about race today, because I know how we feel about from a black man's perspective. I would just like to hear from your perspective on how you feel about race. You know, I think, you know, this is your show. You was on the show last week, and you got our perspective. I'd like to hear, honestly, how, you know, a white guy feels about race relations today.
Well, I appreciate that, Goldie. I really do. Thank you very much. You know, in my opinion, you know, we've still got racism. We're always going to have some sort of racism in this country. I think when you bring together different ethnicities, different cultures, and everything else, you are bound. It's human nature to have some sort of problem with that. So there's always going to be racism. However, what I don't see today is where race is a deciding factor in most situations. You know, one of the things we talked about last week, and I'm actually going to get into that later, Goldie, because you were talking about crime and everything last week, and I've got the numbers for you. You know, but one of the things that I see today is that we have a smaller and smaller segment of the population screaming racism, but the ones with the loudest voices are people who haven't been through the era, who didn't go through the 60s and the 70s and overcoming. You know, most of the people that I hear out there now, you know, are coming up or in their mid-30s and above, so they didn't have to struggle through that fight. They weren't born into that fight. And what they learned was taught to them. Racism to me is not an institutional thing. Racism to me is something that's taught. We're not born racist. We become learned racist. So from a white person's perspective, I think that applies on both sides. So what we have to do is find a way to overcome that. And for me, having the ability to have the discussion about race from both sides of the equation, both black and white, is where we really start to truly address what we can do to solve this situation. Does that make sense?
Ed, I like the way you articulate that and you put that out. And one of the biggest things is, and that's what I've came to realize when I started learning how to articulate. And some of the things, and I'm glad Goldie on the line, because I need Goldie to hear something that I wanted to make sure. And Ed, you tell me if I'm right or wrong. When I started learning how to speak in the European community, I found out there's different dialects that European culture, okay, will allow you in, and then they go to the next level, then they go to the next level, they go to the next level. And it's always a way to keep, and if you can't intellectually get there, then you are the one can't engage in the conversation. I learned by being in the medical field when I first started realizing that I wanted to learn how to speak in a culture.
I knew how to speak. What are you talking about, me, Sean?
Hold on, Goldie.
Go ahead,
Goldie. I'm just trying to follow you.
Goldie, relax, Goldie. Here I'm going.
When I
started realizing, because we have to acknowledge that in my community, all I learned initially is how to speak and communicate in the culture of people that I was comfortable with, okay? Now, I knew how to talk and communicate within my own culture or within my own English link. Just because you speak English, okay, doesn't necessarily mean that the same English dialect, it's the same English when you cross over trying to speak, and especially when you go to intellectual, you're trying to talk about things. And when I started learning how to engage and have conversations outside of my culture into another culture of men or another culture that was outside that I was at, I realized it was a real eye-opener for me that I had to engage my conversation to go to the next level, to get to where I wanted to be, so that I could be respected and be seen and be heard and be respected as the man that I – Ed, do you agree with that or not? Because, see, that's true. Because
what I'm gathering, what you're trying to say is when you're growing up in one culture and you're limited to outside cultures, there's one way of communicating. But when you get out in the real world and you have all these different cultures that you have to communicate with, you either learn to communicate with all and get your respect and grow up, or you continue relating to just one
particular
culture.
You be an outsider. You feel as an outsider, you can't feel that you can't engage. You feel like you can't because here's what I've found out. It ain't their fault if you don't engage and learn how to get on the playing field and learn how to communicate. It's you. You have to decide. Listen, if I want to get, and I'm using the medical field as an example. When I first went into the medical field, I didn't know the language in the medical field at all. I came home as a grunt. I was an infantry guy.
You're saying all this to say what, Meshon? We have to learn to change.
What's the bottom line?
Someone else.
What it's called is when you're in the jungle, okay, you do as the jungle. You learn the rules of how to survive in the jungle. If all you do is stay in your neck of the woods, in your comfort zone, around your own, then you can survive, but your survival is very limited. But when you get into the jungle, and you get into wildlife, and you get out there, and you have to learn how to survive among everybody else, only those who learn how to navigate themselves to survive will win. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not following you at all, Meshon.
Go ahead.
I'm confused now. What are we talking about? I'm confused.
Meshon, if I'm hearing this right, and correct me if I'm wrong, Meshon, but basically you're saying that, you know, when you stay in one little cubicle, you feel safe, but that's not necessarily living. It's when you go beyond what you see as this small reality that you can grow and you can see other cultures, avenues, ways to communicate, and it opens up your mindset. Is that basically
there
it?
There you go.
Okay.
But most black people don't stay in a little cubicle. We interact in the society every day. You know,
I actually agree with you, Goldie. The thing for me though, when you talk about we interact outside of that cubicle every day, the thing for me though is, you know, when you're in the military, you kind of learn different things. You know, when you're in the military, you don't look at a white guy or a black guy as white or black. You look at those guys as your brothers or sisters. All right, you look at these people that you're going to depend on them to save your life. There's no skin barrier. And I think ultimately, what happens is, though we use the words that we interact every day outside of that cubicle, the reality is, are we open? Do we feel free to interact and engage in that atmosphere outside the cubicle?
I think what happens is that, you know, black people are not afraid to engage white people. It's just the fact that black people have to change to fit
truthfully,
in and be accepted. Truthfully,
from my experience, it seems to me that more white people are scared to engage black people than the other way around. Seriously, I mean I
beg to differ with you because one of the biggest things right at this point right now, I literally can get probably more. I hate using color. You're killing me using black. I can probably get more black men, African American men, to engage or come to a conversation about and talk about race than I can probably get European males to come to the conversation.
Well, that's
about,
the
right?
whole point.
And the reason why I can say that with confidence, because I'm in an environment with 98% of my the people that I kick it with.
That's exactly what I just said, Michonne. White people are more scared to engage with black people than black people are to engage with white people.
There's
not many white people out there. And I'll tell you this, and I'm not tooting my own horn. But how many white people do you know in your cubicle, in your circle, how many white people do you know who would actually go out there and say, you know what, I'm going to go have a serious conversation about race, for thousands of people to hear. All right? I mean, that's reality. I've got to take another call here, guys. We've got all kinds of people lining up, and I'm going to try to get everybody on. I've got to go to Andy Hodges first. He's been on hold for quite a while. Andy, how are you, sir?
I've got a headache.
Welcome to my world.
I got a headache.
All right, what's going on?
You know what? And I love my brothers, and I talk about you too, Ed. But I think we're doing people a disservice. And the truth of the matter is, it's the reason we still live in two separate worlds. Okay, we engage each other in these DMZs and these the militarized zone is the job place of the the stores and stuff. And you have people who are interracially married, having interracial children, but one of the things that we haven't overcome in America is the truth hasn't been told on either side. And we talk about this all the time. There's a difference between institutional racism and personal racism.
That's right.
And my argument, and see, this is the thing where when we're talking about being a man, if you talk to somebody from England, they'll tell you that white people came under here. 70% of them in the beginning were indentured slaves or flat-out criminals. Okay? Now, but because you guys got over here and you won, you made this really great a summation. Like God was at the head of these ships with this burning spear to help to guide the way. And this has been part of the problem because we don't see enough commonality among each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
When Michonne said that we were let loose, let's use the term freedom. White people see freedom as an intangible. Most white people still see freedom as a race. And when we sat down and we speak in the same, we're using the same words, but they don't have the same implications. It's just like
Andy. Andy, I wanted. Yeah, I think what you said. I mean, I don't want to because if we're gonna talk about things, he said something that's so very important, Ed, that we need to back that up. He said when white folks see European Americans see freedom, and when they think about freedom, and this is something I had to learn. They see it as intangible. That means they see it and they feel it. It's a real.
No. Intangible means it permeates their very being. It's in the trees. It's in the grass.
Yes, right. It's a reality.
Why?
It's breathing.
Right.
All right, guys. We're getting hung up on semantics and wasting time. Here's the bottom line. Andy, what's your point?
Exactly.
What's your point, Andy?
Okay. Do I get to finish? All I'm saying is. And when you and I were talking about 4 months ago, remember you were talking about World War II and when black people, when we were finally allowed to fight on the front lines.
Okay.
And remember you said black people were fighting for freedom, and I said, no, black people were fighting for respect.
Right.
I remember that conversation.
See,
you're right. And I agree. Your perception was better than mine.
And see, both sides have to realize that there's an arrogance in our conversation. That there's an assumption that we both understand what we're both saying. We're speaking a similar language, but the words have different meanings. And see, my argument
What's
with
your
my
point?
People is this. The point is, until we both give each other, until we both agree on the language, you can't fix the problem.
Actually, agree with that, Andy. That's why it's so important to continue having this discussion, because
I think that ultimately
everybody wants the same thing. Whether you're a black man or a white man doesn't matter. We all want the same thing. We want equality, and we want the right to be free. Go ahead.
But you know what, though, Ed? Once again, my brother, I hate to contradict you. White people are still waiting on an impending race war. And most black people are just, we want the war to be over. We ain't even declared. See, we feel like war was declared on us at the time we got it.
But isn't that by design?
But I understand that. But what I'm trying to tell you is that when you sit down and say, I want peace, okay? You say everybody wants peace, okay? We have never known peace in this country. So once again, I got to come to you to figure out what peace looks like. Now we know what violence looks like. We know what conflict looks like.
Everybody thinks they know history, though, right? We all think we know history, right? But let's look at the reality here. I want to get this in, Bishorn, because to me it's very important. This is a political show, and we're going to switch this around to politics here shortly. We're going to talk about the politics of racism and the politics of poverty. But, you know, here's the thing for me. How many people on this line that are African-American know who Benjamin Banneker is?
Okay,
Mary Bethune. Ralph Bunche.
Okay.
Now, here's some names. Here's the point. Here's the point, though, all right? Throughout history, from at least the 1700s up, okay, we've got people that are African-American who have made a great contribution to society. Some of these people were in government back in the 1800s, okay?
Yeah.
The point is we have had periods of time where we could capitalize and get the diversity that we all seek and forget about all this black-white paradigm. But for some reason, we were never able to do that. I'm going to get a couple of people on the line real quick if they've been patiently waiting. Please identify. This is 802 number.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gammy.
What is that?
Hey, what's up, Gammy? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. It's Gammy with a G like Pammy, Gammy.
Okay.
Mr. Bishorn, I have a question for you.
Come on, bring it on, man.
Yes, sir. You say that you have been delivered or overcame racism, right?
Navigated. I have navigated. I've been taught not to use overcome because that's offensive to some folks. So I'm going to say I have navigated. Racism still is there, but I've navigated to be free as the man I am today.
Okay, well, my question to you is, and since you explained it like that, the question may be appropriate or inappropriate, but I'm still going to ask it.
Sure, go ahead.
When you gave the definition of racism in a racist, which we know is one race of people thinking they're superior to the other, and
right.
they want to dominate and control that race of people.
Exactly.
And my question to you is how could you overcome it unless one accepts their role in it when it's still very prevalent and happening today, and it's happening today more on a psychological level?
All right. Very good question. I think we need to go back and understand the beginnings. And I'm going to speak of it from my point of view of what I understand. Initially, okay, when I say that I have navigated, I was born into it in 1961. And the first people to teach me the difference between racism was my own parents, okay? So my mother, and I'm going to use my mother example because she was the most dominant, she passed on what she had not yet learn how to navigate and overcome. So I, without even knowing what it is that I had to take on, I took on a hatred or a dislike for a culture or people and everything without even realizing why, okay? That's as a child. You embrace, you carry on stuff. Then when I came to my ability, when I became a man, or I say when I became an adult to be able to make a decision for myself, I had to, and this is where the intellectual part of being able to discern between what's right and what's wrong, okay, through knowledge and understanding. When I say that I have navigated, I said I was born into it, but I've navigated. I have caused European culture that is still racist, not as indoctrinated by the government that has implied it, because we don't have the government that is institutionalized it. We have laws and everything to subject. But as I said, that 85% of our society is still a culture of European Americans that's still in a dominant position. I still have to go out and engage it, and as the movie Avatar, make them see me, not for my color, but as a man, as they call themselves a man, all right? That's the difference. I'm not seeking that they treat me based on the color of my skin. Am I not a man and a brother? Is where I shoot from, okay? So when I engage and I get out there, that's why I can navigate, because I'm a man in all seasons and everywhere I go. I no longer look for someone to give me props or anything for the color of my skin. If you see that, that's cool. I ain't mad at you. But the first thing I'm going to make sure you understand, I'm a man.
I have trouble following what the hell you talking about, Meshawn. I really do have trouble following what you're talking about.
Well,
okay. I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Hold on, guys. All right.
Okay.
Real quick.
I'm being serious. It's hard to.
But Goldie, you know, since you directed that to me, you don't know what I'm talking about. It's just very simple, Goldie. It's not very complicated. Everywhere I go, I'm a man. Everywhere I go. No longer do I need to count, look, or be concerned about who's in the room or why they're in the room. I come there with my agenda, my plan, what it is.
Most black people don't. Most black people don't.
The way that I'm interpreting this, Meshawn, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way that I'm interpreting this, when you walk into a room, you're not worried about whose eyes are on you, and you're not looking for anybody else. You're there, you know what you're there for, and that's all that matters.
That's all that matters, okay?
Okay.
I'm not looking for someone to validate my culture. I'm not looking for one to validate me. I'm looking.
Meshawn is essentially, I mean, we're not talking about a doctor's office, Goldie. I walk into different events. I mean, you know, I walk into the NAACP, you know, and talk to these guys, and I have. You know, I was a candidate in 2006 for mayor, and I spoke with Raoul Cunningham and people with the NAACP. You know, so, you know, essentially what we're looking at here, if I'm understanding Meshawn right, is, you know, we're not talking about doctor's office, things like that, but when you go into a situation that you're not familiar with, you know, sometimes you have a little bit of anxiety. Now, I know when I met with the NAACP, I wasn't sure what to expect. I knew what I was there to do. I knew what I was there to say, and I was looking for support, and I hold firm in my beliefs and my convictions. I didn't walk in there as a white guy looking for people to automatically assume that I'm somebody or not. I walked in there to have a rational discussion about race relations, what I could do to help with that particular organization. Black and white was not the paradigm. Is that what I'm understanding, Meshawn?
There you go. Do you see?
Okay. Yes, sir.
There you go, Ed.
Hold on. Again, go. Yes.
Act like that most black people walk into situations thinking that way, and that's not the way most black people work.
The question was applied to me. Why do I see that I'm free? I just answered the question from my perspective. That's all.
Hold on.
Yeah, who's this?
That's Andy. Go ahead.
I'd like to, Andy, for a second, please.
Yes, sir.
You know what we're doing here, and this is, let's let Goldie tell us why he don't understand us, because maybe if we heard Goldie's story, maybe then we'd have a better understanding, because Goldie acts like we from different sides of the fence.
I'm getting back.
Hey, we got
noise,
a lot
folks.
Of static there, man.
Yeah, I'm getting background noise, folks. Pay attention to that, please. Goldie is trying to articulate what he wants to get through, and you know, again, I think we're looking at a situation now you know, where Michonne, you were talking a second ago about, you know, different languages, if you will, you know, and I think we're seeing that now. Oh, was that you? Okay. I think we're seeing that now. Gannon, you had something else you wanted to say. Please go ahead. And I've got to get to my next caller.
Michelle, I mean, you're still not really answering the question based upon the definition of racism and racist. I understand what you're saying, and I respect that from a personal point of view, but we still are a people, according to the definition, being ruled over. We still are a people, according to the definition, being ruled by a people with a superiority complex. And my question is, how can we overcome that when it's still very real and prevalent unless we become ruled over?
Let me ask you this question. So right now in our communities, in our churches, and our families, and the statistics that are on the books concerning our culture of people, you're saying to me that that's all being controlled totally by the white society of the people that's in control. So at this point right now. We have no control of our reality. Our reality currently right now is, I just want to make sure, our reality is totally controlled by the white superior individuals that are in America right now. All the things that's facing our culture right now, specifically our culture, black-on-black crime, dropouts in education, breakup in the marriage, children out of wedlock, okay? 70%.
I'm going to hate to do this, guys, but I'm going to cut off all the mics except for the one speaker if we have to go that route. We're not going there. Let me explain this real quick. Gannon, I think I understand what you're saying, but in my opinion, and this is what I want to know from you, okay? Mm-hmm. You say you're still being ruled over, that you're still being ruled over at basically an elite class. Explain to me what you mean by that, because I'm trying to understand where you're coming from, and I don't see the black man being ruled over any more than I am today. So explain that to me, if you can, where you're coming from with that.
Well, and I can understand what you're saying up to a certain degree from that point of view, because the whole American system is set up on a racist slavery system. So people are ruled over. Black people are ruled over economically. Right. Oftentimes, black people don't have the knowledge to be able to overcome their situation because of the effects of slavery that has been psychologically duped. I mean, this just happened in 2011, Ed, where they went on CNN and asked the little black girls about the white dolls, the same thing they did in 1965. And the results were the same, where the little black doll said that the white doll would be more successful. They said that the white doll was more intelligent. They said that the white doll will be more apt to get an education. So there's a psychological infiltration of racism that has happened to black people that is not causing them to become or manifest into the abilities that they have. So what does white America do? They capitalize on all of our abilities. They capitalize on us economically. They capitalize on us socially. That's happening every day.
How so is the white man capitalizing on you economically today? How am I capitalizing on you?
Well, I'm not necessarily saying you, Ed, but you know the ones in power You know the ones in power that really have the power, that really control economics, that really put blacks on one side of town, whites on one side of town. I mean, it's just been proven here recently that banks were giving blacks higher interest rates for homes than whites. So the power structure is doing it.
Well, see, actually, it's not just blacks that are affected by that, and I'll tell you that from firsthand experience. I'm one of those people that they tried to illegally foreclose on, and I'm in the middle of a court case now because my interest rates were manipulated, the same as yours were over 10 years ago, okay? So that's a court case I'm going on now. I'm fighting that fight myself, all right? And I'm a white guy. So, you know, it does – what you're talking about essentially is the takeover of the middle class, in my opinion, and leading to poverty and everything else. And here's some interesting things that we've got to look at, too, because, Michonne, you brought up – you know, crime and everything just a second ago. And the reality is the crime is just as prevalent. It's just as prevalent. The problem with crime is just as prevalent in the white community as it is the black. I mean, if we want to sit here and we want to look at what's really going on out here, 93% of all black murders are black-on-black crime. But nobody out there knows. Nobody out there knows.
Hey, yo, Ed, who's making all that noise, man?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. But nobody out there knows that 84% of white murders are white-on-white crimes. That's an alarming thing. But we don't have any...
Hey, Ed, and I don't mean to cut you off, but what you just said right there, how come CNN ain't talking about that?
That's
how
the whole
thing. Reason why they ain't talking about that, because this is a predominantly white society where the white supremacists rule, and they don't want you to know nothing
like
that.
Actually, it's a liberal-controlled media.
It's a liberal-controlled liberal-controlled
society. I want to get this other caller in. They've been very, very patient. I want to get them in real quick. Caller 356, what's your name and what can
we
do for you?
This is Sean Gardner.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Oh, my God.
Listen, I was running a little late. I had karate class tonight. But like the first thing I want to say is I can appreciate Ed for doing this show. You know, I was talking to Mishon a little bit earlier, and one of the things we talked about, and I like what Mishon said, we talked about having conversations, getting men to understand that we're all men, but having discussions about issues that divide us. And I know, Ed, you said this is a political show, but the reality is not only does politics divide us, but race divides us. So I just want to say I'm glad that you all are having this show. I wish there was a way, I haven't been able to hear the whole show, but the point that I've been able to tune into, I've heard Ed, Andy, Mishon, Goldie. I don't know how many other people are on the actual line, but I'd like to see the conversation open up a little bit more, because one of the things y'all talked about is people being in a comfort zone to have the discussion
right.
about race. One of the things me and Mishon talk about is this. At the end of the day, I don't know if it's an intentional thing when you start talking about race, but I think there's an aspect of white privilege that a lot of white America doesn't even know exists. So at the end of the day, when we have this discussion, why would I want to talk about, if I'm a white man, why would I want to have a discussion about race? I don't see it. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't
affect me.
But as a black man, I want to make sure I'm clear on something. I don't walk around with a chip on my shoulder saying, proclaiming to the world, I'm a black man and the white man is holding me down. I don't proclaim that. And when I walk in the space, I walk in the space as a man as well. But at the end of the day, the reality is I know that race does play a factor. If race doesn't play a factor, how can a group of people who comprise a very small percentage of this country lead in almost every negative aspect? Now, I know some of us on this line might say, well, Sean, that's y'all's fault. Y'all not holding each other accountable and y'all not being responsible. But at the end of the day, it's not that clear cut and simple. There's some other things going on. Andy points to it all the time. He talks about institutional racism and individual racism. And I think what we don't look at the infrastructure that's in place that makes a lot of black men get frustrated, like myself, like Goldie, who understand that, you know what, there's a problem in this country, and how can we get around it when we won't even discuss it?
Well, here's the thing.
So I commend you on discussing it, huh?
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, I'm not
a big fan
of Louis Farrakhan, as everybody knows. And I've made that very clear through the years. But, you know, he asked a question at an event a couple of weeks ago. And his question was this, and the crowd loved it. They went nuts on it. But the question was this: how long are you going to sit around begging white people to do for you what you have
Hello,
the power
bro.
To do for yourself?
Yeah.
You see
Hello.
What I mean? Everybody,
I agree. I totally agree with that.
But
well,
you know what, Ed, I like that question.
Hey,
here's the reality. You know what, it's easy to
Hello?
Say, when are we going to, can y'all hear me? Ed, can you hear me?
Yeah, I've got you.
I guess my thing is, when Farrakhan said that, there's an aspect of self-responsibility that we all have to get behind, right?
Self-determination.
I'm a huge advocate of self-responsibility, but at the end of the day, I also know that it's social determinants that influence this responsibility that we have. I wrote a book, Me Versus Me, and in my book, Me Versus Me, I talk about all the bad choices I've made in my life. However, the reality is the bad choices that I've made in my life was reflective of the information that I had. At the end of the day, there's a lot of things in this country that while Louis Farrakhan can say that, I understand why he's saying it, there is some information that we don't always have. But I think it's not just the black man. I think it's also the white man. What is actually going on that's keeping us from all coming together and embracing one another's culture? And we all are different. So
okay.
That to me is systemic. Go ahead.
Can I get in here for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, let's like I said,
this is to me. When you step back and you take the emotion out of the thing, white people in America have been taught that there's an impending race war coming. You heard about it during Obama's campaign the last time. I had people come to me, if you don't win it, you guys are going to ride. There's been a contingency plan in place since the Civil War. They're waiting on take up arms. Now, black people have been taught, and you hear it in the conversation, that white people, by design, are arrogant as hell. You can't tell them nothing. So subsequently, step back, let them do what they're going to do, and then once they're there, in the midst of the confusion, we go about collecting crumbs. We have two different approaches to America, and it's kind of like that. And until we like I said, till we establish a language where the words mean the same thing. It's just like me working in construction, and you have and if you got two carpenters, one guy a tape measure is a foot, 12 inches, but you got another guy working with a tape measure that's 14 inches. Both of them can read blueprints. But at the end of the day, that house is going to be off because they're using different scales. And that's the problem. That's the biggest problem. Black people are still it's a testament to our family if we're not angry. If we don't feel that it's a family heirloom.
Ed, I want to ask you something.
Yeah,
Ed,
Ed.
Go ahead,
Ed,
Michonne.
Here's my, because the whole reason that I came to this show, and when I called you to come to this show, is that after listening to my show, I wanted to bring the conversation of racism to a diverse and trying to get more American European males of the culture to call in to engage this dialogue. I want to hear from where's your people at, man? Okay, I want to hear from them.
My friends. You know what? I've got an open policy on the show. If they want to talk, they can hit the number one. They're listening. But
yeah.
It's just a matter.
They listening. Yeah. That goes back to something that I've been trying to do on my show, and I actually have an audience of people that listen to my show also, but they choose not to engage because it's something that Sean and I was talking about. I had this conversation with Andy as well, is that when I've gone back to some of my European male friends and say, man, they said, man, I heard your show. Man, good show. Who would, and I ask, why you don't call in? I don't want to. Man, it's really not something I need to deal with, and so I don't want to hear. See, that's where I want to challenge that, because that is our problem as a culture of people, as American people, okay?
Well,
specifically the men.
But I think ultimately, Michonne, what it really boils down to, especially with this show, because this show is politically oriented show. We deal with political issues.
Politics,
And this is a political thing. But what you find more often than not, is you're going to find more people. I mean, you got to understand, a lot of people are actually listening to this discussion about race, a real discussion about race, probably for the first time. So you want to listen, you want to pay attention, you want to sink in, and you want to think. You know what I mean? So I don't have any problems with nobody talking on that. But I tell you what we are going to do. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to switch gears just a little bit. I promised Goldie last week we were going to get into some of these stats, and I meant that. We're going to talk about some of these stats and let people know the real truth, and we're going to talk about the politics of racism. Who's created the problems and why are they there? Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back. Ed Springsteen Show right here on the NBN Radio Network. Hey, listen, guys, you want something to do? Spend like 5 to 10 bucks, get a couple hours out of the house. Check out Bingo. That's right, Sunshine Bingo Hall over at the corner of Outer Loop and Old Ship up in the Peddler's Mall. These guys have sessions literally every day of the week. Check out Sunshine Bingo Center and see what they got a session that'll fit you. I'm serious. Play for $5, 2 hours out, get a chance at a grand. Who can beat that? Check out our friends at Sunshine Bingo Center. Okay, we are back. And I tell you, me, Sean, we're going all over the round robin tonight, my friend. I tell you. And which is good. This is exactly what I like. And we lost Ganny. And Sean, I guess they had other things to do. I want to take one call real quick. They've been here waiting for a few minutes and they're back. Caller 356.
Up to her.
Oh, Sean, man, my bad. Sean. It showed you off my screen.
I'm enjoying the show.
Okay,
yeah,
showed
I'm
you off my
show.
Screen for a minute, and it just brought you back. I don't know why that happened.
Okay.
You know, we've still got Andy and Goldie on. This hour, I kind of want to focus on some misconceptions, if we can, because I tell you, you know, one of the things that greatly disturbs me about race in America is the way that everything is portrayed. I mean, everybody who knows anything about history knows all about the Emancipation Proclamation. It was an executive order by Abraham Lincoln, you know. But what's fascinating to me is when we look at the institutional racism, and I mean that based on poverty, not necessarily color of skin. You know, it's alarming to me. Nobody really understands. You know, even the black community who goes out there and traditionally votes Democrat at all costs today, the black community prior to JFK voted Republican and conservative. And a lot of people believe that during the JFK administration, because JFK was adopting the civil rights as part of his domestic policy, okay, that's when the blacks typically, and they started turning to Democrat because they believed in civil rights, as anybody with half a brain should. So, you know, when we look at this in play, and we look at what the Democratic Party has done through the years, you know, we hear all kinds of things about black crime. Blacks are the ones that are on welfare, black this, black that, but the reality is entirely different. Because here's what America needs to know. The largest racial group in this country, the whites, commit the majority of crimes in America. Especially, whites are responsible for the vast majority of violent crimes. And I think you can back that up. Look at the two mass murders we've had in the last couple of weeks.
Well, most definitely.
When you look at aggravated assault, whites led blacks 2-1 in arrest. Forcible rape cases, whites led all racial and ethnic groups by more than 2-1. Larceny theft, whites led blacks more than 2-1. And oh, by the way, murders, whites, 84% of white murder is done by white on white crime. But we never hear those statistics, do we?
You know what, Ed? I like to hear those stats from last week. But I would like to see them. I'm going to tell you why. At the end of the day, you can give us all those stats you want, but we know in the prison population, you see a high percentage of blacks. But not only that, at the end of the day, when you start talking about the small percentage that comprises the country of African Americans, the reality is, why are we so alarmingly at the top of all the negative statistics? So I hear what you're saying, but if you know, and I'm not disputing you. I'm not saying, hey, you know, you're selling us a bag of goods, but I'm saying I would like to see those stats for myself to see exactly.
That's not a problem.
Because to me, it's not really adding up from what I know.
Well, see, that's exactly it. Because your reality is entirely different. But how do you know your reality? It's because of what you see and what you're taught, right?
Mm.
I mean, well, am I wrong in that assessment?
Ed, in all actuality, you are correct in your statement there, because majority of us get our information from the media and what everybody else is saying. How many of us actually sit down? And I learned something when I incorporated my company.
I said
how many of us as a whole, okay, actually look up and identify and find out information for themselves. It's some numbers that I had to find out for myself when I was incorporating my company about the demographics and the breakdown of the family. I was alarmed to realize that blacks was not the lead when it comes to a lot of violence and everything. When I say I was alarmed,
exactly.
Because that's
see,
not,
here's how it happens.
I didn't know that. When I was trying to put a marketing strategy together about who I should be marketing to, and this is something that came out also, it specifically said that if you're marketing
certain demographics of people who's going to give out money based on just feel good or whatever, you're a market to the black community, okay? If you want to market to social things or political things or for intellectual things, you market to the white females and then the white males, okay? So, you know, these are things that you came to realize in the marketing strategy and everything. We get played by our numbers because we don't know our own numbers sometimes, how we manage ourselves.
But see, here's the thing.
We need to learn our own numbers of how
to
manage ourselves.
But here's the thing, though, and that's exactly it. How does this stuff happen? I'll tell you how it happens. Mainstream media perpetuates the myth, and I've got a great example of that. Washington Post columnist George Will, everybody knows who George Will is, right? He's always on TV. All right. He made the statement during the whole Trayvon mess. He made the statement that 150 black men are killed every week in this country, 94% of them by other black men. Now, I'm sure George Will is going to say his intent was to point out that white-on-black crime is a lot less than intra-racial crime is. However, he didn't point out the flip side of that. White-on-white crime accounts for 84% of the white murders in this country. You see what I'm saying? So the myth
What I heard is the fact that black men, regardless of the vehicle of their demise, are leaving the planet at an alarming rate. You said something earlier about the crime stats, and I want to go back to. I want to speak to Sean about this because we see every community looks at crime differently. Now look how we done changed, Sean, in less than 15 years. Look how we speak about people that's going to jail. What's the terminology now for jail? He went to school.
They're going to school.
Okay.
Well, I got news for you. I went to school for one day, and I didn't like it at all. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm telling you is that if you got a group of people that see this as a rite of passage, then that's just what you're supposed to do.
But again, the point I'm making here, I'm not arguing with your point, Andy. What I'm trying to point out here is, though, that's the myth. You know, the media, if you look at the media, and everybody says I pick on mainstream too much, and maybe I do. But when you look at the media in this particular equation, that's what we get. The other night was a great example to me of a media manipulation, and I'll tell you why. Are you guys watching the Olympics every night?
Yeah, pretty much, not every night.
Well, we all pay attention to it, though, right? Do you guys remember seeing Gabby win the gold and the women's all around?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic, wasn't it? Yeah, that wasn't very good either. But take the monkey commercial out for a minute. I want to focus on two
things. Monkey commercial?
Right as soon as she won it, they played a commercial with a monkey holding on to the rings. It was the most pathetic thing I've ever seen in my life.
Are you serious?
Yeah, on NBC. But here's the thing. Here's two other things I want to point out. While Gabby wins the gold, social media and other places were sitting there making a huge issue talking about how bad her hair was and she should be embarrassed to have her hair that way.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you're
going
there.
How pathetic was that? And secondly, did you guys hear Bob Costas at the end of the NBC segment for the Olympics that night? Bob Costas says, you know, there's not a lot of first in America anymore. But Gabby is the first African-American woman to win the all-around gold in gymnastics. Now, that would have been a great thing if he'd have left it there, because he was right. But he had
but he went on and added something else. I listened to that.
And my ears,
I do remember it. My eyebrow raised up. Did you let her finish
making his point?
Well, that's it. Thank you. What he added there was this.
You know what goes?
He said young African American girls should really be proud that they have somebody to look up to.
Right.
But, you know, what's wrong with that?
Well, you would think there's nothing wrong with that if we weren't worried about race all the time. For me personally, I could see that as being a dividing issue. What I can see is a lot of people saying, hey, look, a little black girl did good, so now all the other black girls have somebody to look up to. That wasn't kosher to me, because that's what a lot of people are going to think when they heard it. And that's the problem.
Wait a minute, hold on, let me cut you up, Andy. Here's my thing. I hear you, Ed,
And this is why I think conversations like this are so difficult. First of all, you throw out them stats, and I definitely want to look at those stats, right? I'm that person, well, you know, I'm not going to really speak on it, so I know for sure. But in terms of the Gabby situation, the reality is this. If she's the first 16-year-old African-American black girl to do it, guess what? That gives a whole country of black 16-year-old girls an opportunity to see stuff they don't see every day. Another case in point, look at Barack Obama. At the end of the day, when I go out to schools and I work with young kids, right, who are getting in trouble, most of the time I got the young black kids, young black boys, now I can be like, well, you know what, man, there's nothing you can't be. Because it took us 44 presidents before we could even get a black president. I mean, that's not, to me, that's not.
But that's
I
not,
don't know,
I don't think that's what he was. That wasn't exactly what he was.
Hang on, I want an answer.
I don't,
huh? Do you really think that Barack Obama is a black president?
Absolutely not.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, I mean, you're laughing, but that's a good question, Ed.
Hang on, I asked y'all the question. Let him respond. Go ahead.
Now, hold on. Ed, I wanted to say something before you move on from the Olympics. And see, we have a short memory. Remember the last Winter Olympics, and he had a black speed skater, black guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you know his, and I can't remember his name, but, dude, they blackballed him in the sport. They told a story about how when he would show up to skate, they would literally try to run him off, beat him up, because they told him blacks didn't skate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, this is when we talk about this type of racism. Now, the Olympics, and once again, nice showcase. But see, if we were all truly Americans, then that statement wouldn't be necessary. I'm not talking about
that last statement
away.
What he made would not have been necessary.
That's
what
point.
I had a problem.
Go ahead, Sean.
See, black people, once again, what we're being told indirectly is if you want to do something, it's just like with the Williams girls. They didn't have, you know, it wasn't any black females in their particular age group. Their father had to tell them about Wilma Rudolph and all these other people who had rose to a certain level in tennis,
right.
Arthur Ashe and all these people. The problem here with us is we are still not fully integrated into this society. Like I told you, Ed, and Michelle, we talked about this. Black people, we still kind of like the Amish. We live in America, but we always shaking our finger at the English. You bad English.
But what do you have to do, though? That's the whole, that's the whole ever-loving point. You know, do you sit back and wait for white society to extend a red carpet?
No.
Or do you take the freedom that you have, or do you take the freedom that you're granted by your creator?
Hold on. Wait a minute. You know what? Me and Michonne was talking. And I think, you know, listen, I'll be the first to tell you that when we have these race discussions, they frustrate the heck out of me because you also
are
talking.
They frustrate everybody.
They frustrate me because I hear some stuff and I know the stuff that I'm hearing ain't right. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't have my book open to the stats and the facts. But I tell you what, I may have to go refresh myself. But I'm gonna tell you something. I was talking to Michonne just the other day, and you know, we can have this talk about race and the freedom that we're all provided. But you know, there was just an article talking about mortgage. Now, it didn't say there's a culture of people who, you know, weren't employed, or there was a culture of people who weren't paying their mortgage. But somehow or another, it was a topic of mortgage. And they talk about no matter what the blacks are doing, that they're not able to get mortgages or something as their white counterparts are. So that didn't have anything to do with nothing other than the institutional racism that exists. So at the end of the day, we just talk about these freedoms that exist. Yeah, well, you know, you're right.
But also,
that, you know, we're all free. But at the end of the day, there are certain things that are taking place that make it impossible.
Hey Sean, but I wanna also add into there. There's a such thing as called greed too, and here's what I want you to understand something. I'm in agreement with you, but you gotta understand what drives greed as well. Okay. What I also found out when I was selling life insurance and mortgages and things, it's a book about what do you know about life insurance, or what do you know about specifically, but what do you know about life insurance? This book is written about the practices of what people do. Well, when you know that you can sell to a demographics of people less than them asking and challenging the different things that can get you paid, then that drives you to do certain things to get paid. And I say that because I've actually sold. And I was with Primary Financial Services. We practice to keep our practice across the board, everybody. Well, we combated mortgage companies that literally went in the black community not because they could even qualify to pay for it, okay? It's because there was easy money for them to get made because the blacks, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but they was using the lack of them not knowing how mortgage work and how these things work, like a balloon loan. Most European Americans would not buy a balloon loan. Or when I say to you about a fixed loan versus a flexible loan. Well, most of us understand inflation and everything. You don't want to mess with.
Well, what you're essentially talking about, Michonne, I was Primerica too for quite some time, and
yes,
what you're essentially talking about is education. Black people for the most part, and it's not just black people, it's white people the same way.
What you're talking about
is economic, not race.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. Because the economy, when you deal with stuff like that, the poor people don't know.
They get taken advantage of the most.
How many people are listening right now that know? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I want to ask your white audience something, if they're the ones that are listening. Can I do that?
Go ahead.
You're a parent as well, Ed.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to try to put you kind of in the shoes of black people and how sometimes we feel. You have kids, right?
Yep.
Okay. Just say you send your kids to school every day for them to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And all the books have nobody in them that look like them. Maybe 4 or 5 pages for White History Month. Okay? Then your kids come home. They turn on the TV. They see nobody that looks like them. Except if they do, you know, you got white women with their butts all on the TV. You got white men on television singing about taking meth and selling meth in white communities and all of this stuff. That's all your kids see, and that's all you see. Then what is that noise?
I don't know. I'm trying to find it. Go ahead.
Then you know, you get magazines. They see, you know, all they see is pretty black women with afros and braided hair. That's all they ever see. You know, how would that make you feel as a parent? How would that make you feel if your kid's whole existence, everything they see looks mostly like other people?
But Goldie, that's exactly the whole ever-loving point, man. That's exactly what I'm trying to say a minute ago and what I'm trying to get to, and we're going to get to it here in just a second. But, you know, that's the whole thing, because what the TV portrays, what the mainstream media portrays, is this crystal white society. What you see on mainstream news is that 94% of blacks are killing each other. What you see on mainstream news is a black guy who was arrested for drugs or whatever. What you see on mainstream news is you see Gabby and you got to make a story about her damn hair. And I'll be honest with you, I love Serena Williams, but I thought her hair looked a lot worse than Gabby. The whole point is the mainstream media, in my opinion, manipulates this, but they're not doing it on their own. They're being told what to do. Who's pulling the strings? The thing I'm trying to say here is this. You have a choice, and you can make that change. You have
right.
to stand up to mainstream. You have to stand up to mainstream media. Go ahead.
Hold on, y'all.
Go ahead.
I just want to jump in. Two points here. One, we keep talking about mainstream media. So I guess when we're the difference to mainstream media, what is Fox Network? I mean, we have BBC. But BBC is world news, so the only thing you have left is Fox News. And I'm gonna tell you, when I watch that, I don't feel much better. So I just want to make that point. But then too, you know,
I think they're all the same.
Oh yeah, we're talking about all media, Sean, not just
CNN, Fox, all of them.
I'm talking about all of them.
But then the second thing I want to say, you know, I'm trying to figure out how can we truly have a serious dialogue about race without everyone saying, well, it's about choices, and you know, if black people just made the right choice, they overcome and things will be different.
But you know the reality is in the city of Louisville, if you know there's a 10-year life expectancy gap between those who live in the west end part of the town, west end in Portland, and those who live out in the east end part of town, did y'all know that? It's a 10-year life expectancy gap.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it's a number of reasons. A lot of social determinants that impact and influence that. One, education. Education is a major thing. A lot of the you're not getting people who are graduating out of high school and then moving on to college. And, I mean, that's sort of like this. Me, Sean, just did a show. And the movie they watched was Nothing But a Man or something. There's another documentary I would like to show, and it's called Unnatural Causes. And if we could ever do that, I would like to watch that, and I would like to see people's reactions to that. Because, see, we can talk about race, and what we do, we minimize it to, well, if you just make the right choice, things will be better. But for me, it's not as simple as just make the right choice. I think a lot of people are making the right choice every day, and I don't think people are walking around with a chip on their shoulder either. I think the reality is there's some infrastructure in place that are prohibiting people from taking advantage of this quote-unquote free society that we live in.
Okay, let's cut to the chase here. Let me finish this. Let me cut to the chase real quick. Okay, Sean, I agree with what you're saying, but what I'm going to disagree with when we talk about choices. All right, everybody has a choice to make in this world. If somebody's got a gun to your head, you have a choice to make on how you react to that situation. We all have a choice in every situation. That's my fundamental belief. But here's the thing. When you talk about a 10-year less life expectancy in the West End versus the East End, downtown versus South, whatever, all right, then we have to look at the reality of why that is. It's not just a racial. It's a poverty-driven thing. And the reason go ahead.
If we do unnatural causes, and I know I cut you off, but I tell you what. I would like to watch Unnatural Causes with you. I would set that up. Anybody else who's willing to watch it, especially Andy and me, Sean, I would love it. Then after we watch it, I want to have the same conversation. If we can do that, man,
okay.
I would set it up.
Sean,
I'd be more than happy to do that. Hold on, let me finish this.
You know the demographics that you're talking about? You know what else those same demographics apply? They apply right when I'm getting ready to go to work here in a couple of weeks. Eastern Kentucky.
Let's look at this. Sean has got the truth of what he's saying. The city violent crime rate for Louisville Metro in 2009 was 39% higher than the national violent crime rate. That's alarming. The city property crime rate in Louisville Metro was 41.64% higher. The violent crime rate in Kentucky, compared to the national average, was 130.83% higher than the national average. Okay? So we were higher than the property crime rate in Kentucky by 71%. But we have to look at the reality here. While we're still sitting here fighting over race, we're not looking at what's happening here. Here's the reality. Is education a problem in the black community? Yes, it is. Okay, and that's exactly what Michonne was talking about a minute ago. If you don't know how money works, and you go lock into this balloon note for something as simple as a mortgage because you don't know any better, that's an education thing. You're going to pay
for it. But that's a trap. That's a trap. Because I'm going to tell you something. Now hold on. You got to ask yourself a question here. Is it black people being given inferior education, or are black people also rejecting education?
Andy, I want to preference it in what you're saying there, because that's too far. I mean, you are correct in what you're saying. There's two elements of when we talk about education, and Sean and I, we talk about that is still a choice thing. How much is the education that we get in our community that we reject? Okay, because we say it's the white man's education.
This right here. You know what, y'all? This show is turning to exactly what I thought it was, man.
What's that?
And me and Goldie, we talked about this. At the end of the day, man, you know I can't articulate the way I need to be the situation.
And basically what the show has come into one is me, Sean, and Goldie and myself. This is the same conversation we have on the phone.
Hold on.
Let me finish. So now we got, and I understand, Ed, nobody has to speak, right? I mean, same with me, Sean. So nobody has to speak, but it's interesting to me that we can have this dialogue on your show. What are your loyal fan base? And I'm thinking, wow, man, I'm not saying that to be critical. I'm saying that to say, man, I would love to hear from somebody else. But again, it's turned into what I thought it would be, which is, you know, we talk about race, and it always ends up the only problem with race is that black people ain't making the right choices. And I'm going to tell you something. As long as we keep saying that, we're going to continue to have the problem.
I don't know where you got that from.
Sean, see, that's something that I haven't said at all.
I haven't said that.
When we talk about Ed, can you just say choice? Everybody says choices. I told you about the 10-year gap. It's choices. We got to make choices.
I guess y'all
think that every country, every city in this country, if you go into every major city in this country, where do the black people live? They live in the hood. They live in the worst part of the city. So I guess that's their choice. They want to live there. Every city in this country.
That is the worst part of the city.
Okay. Let me. I've got to go here, guys. I've got to go here because I've sat back and I'm letting you guys get your point. I'm going to make mine. Number one, the only reason I mentioned choices was because Sean brought that into the equation. Number two, never once did I say that the black people were making bad choices, and that's why there's a 10-year life expectancy. What I pointed out was the poverty and the lack of education that is forcing the black people into that situation. It wasn't about choices. Listen to me, guys, and this is straight from the heart. I was brought up dirt poor. By my upbringing, I should be living in a trailer park with 7.3 kids on my third wife with no teeth in my mouth, living on your tax dollars, okay? That's poor. That's the way I was brought up, all right? I lived in an 800-square-foot house that wasn't mine with 13 other people sleeping underneath a sofa sleeper with a TV blaring all night just so I could go to school the next day, and I walked 2 miles to get there, okay? I know about poverty. I've lived poverty. If you ask my wife, I'm headed down that road again. I haven't made no money on this damn thing for 5 years, okay? But I'm still out there pushing it, all right? So I know about poverty, but that's what I'm getting at. I've never said anything about choices. When you're a kid born into poverty, there comes a point in your time and time in your life where you can make a choice to elevate yourself out of there. I made that choice over 30 years ago, and I've never looked back.
I promise you, I'm not trying to be rude here.
I just want to explore the point that you just.
I wrote my book, Me Versus Me, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna tell you, in Me Versus Me, I talk about some of the bad choices I made. Now mm-hmm. I heard what you just said, and I think I'm glad you said it. I think one of the things that really separates us is this. I agree with everything you're saying. The only thing that I want to add to what you're saying is this. At the end of the day, when you start looking at your life, your surroundings, and say, I got to make a conscientious choice here for something better, you got to be able to see better. So if I'm a 16-year-old girl and I just seen Gabby and she just won the Olympics, guess what? When it's time for me to make that choice, I got somebody I can identify with now. When I see the president and whether or not y'all say he's black or not, he looks black. His hair is like mine. I can relate to that. He got swagger like me. I can relate to that. When I was 14, man, you talk about these choices. When I was 14, 16, 18, and 20, every day, man, I thought the next day I'd be dead. Why? I'm carrying a pistol. I'm doing all that crazy stuff. But at the end of the day, I had no support, man. I was homeless. I lived on the street. I mean, really. So at the end, I hear you. I just want to add to that. When we start talking about choices, it still goes back to social determinants and information. The information that I had was a little bit different than the information you had. And I
Absolutely.
Think that's a lot of times one of the variables that determines whether or not a person is going to be a success or not. And in so many times, there's a large percentage of African-Americans who live in poverty, who live in disenfranchised communities. So there's a lack of hope. So when you start talking about making the better choice, the better choices aren't made because a lot of times they're not even you can't even relate to them. I work with so many kids in the schools. When I work with them, they can't even – you know one of the things I tell them to do? Go home. I ask them if they got cable. Yeah, I got cable. Go home
and turn on the Travel Channel and try to imagine yourself there. And I had to do that just to get them exposed to something different because they don't see nothing better. They don't
see nothing
different.
I'm not disagreeing with that, Sean. I spent my life working with kids. I've worked for troubled youth for over 25 years. I'm not disagreeing with you on that, but my point is this. Okay, when I asked you if you thought President Barack Obama was a black president, you know, and you said you can identify with it because of the way he looks, right? That's
okay,
what you
yeah.
just that's
I,
what you just said.
President.
When I look at any president, I don't see black or white. I see what are they doing to better things. Has Barack Obama, as a black president, a so-called black president, has he improved the plight of poverty in America that would help the African Americans, you know, can look forward to doing anything? No, he hasn't. Has he improved education? No, he hasn't. But that affects everybody in poverty. And here's a real quick thing that you need to know. And by the way, I'm going to send you these links to your Facebook account, Sean, because that's the only email I have available for you. But here's something else you need to know. The racial breakdown of food stamps, for example. We talk about how the blacks live in all the poverty. 41% of food stamps. Hang on a second. 41% of food stamp recipients are whites. 36% are African American, 18% Hispanic.
But that's not.
It's not.
Because at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I jumped in. So your point is more whites are on food stamps than blacks, right? Was that
sure,
your point?
But how many people know that?
Okay, but my point. But hold on. I knew that. But let me tell you what else I know. While more whites may be on food stamps than blacks, since we make up a smaller number of this country, that number escalates more. So per capita, it's more blacks on welfare. That's what I mean, getting the food stamps. So it's like, I hear what you're saying. I understand your stat. But if we look at the actual number, the real number, there's only 12% of us in this country, but 36% of us are on welfare. Then you have to start
that's
being
devastating.
Real.
Yeah, that's devastating.
See, that's exactly the whole ever-loving point. Now, my white audience is out there listening to me right now, and they're not going to jump in on this, but that's the whole ever-loving point, because my white audience probably didn't even know that until we just talked about it. The point I'm getting at is everything is manipulated, okay? If the white people make up 74% of this country,
right?
If they make up 74% of this country, all right? And the media...
And they're controlling the media.
They're controlling the media. Actually, I think the globalists control the media, and the globalists
right.
are the white people, the European
right.
males we talk about, okay?
The European culture,
so when
yeah.
we look at this, so when we look at this in play, then what is the reality? That's why you have race problems in America. That's why you
that's
have
why
the
we must have
that
discussion.
We have, and that's why we've got
wait
to find
a
way to
but
communicate.
But wait a minute, hold on. I'm just curious. When y'all say that, I'm saying that while the number of whites on food stamps is more, In the actual number, when you start looking percentage wise, if there's less of one culture and we have 36%, then there's more of that culture on food stamps. So I understand that number.
Sure, you do. But how many people on mainstream media get that? They
well,
hear
how
the
many,
stat.
When the
they
media,
hear the stat,
when the media,
they don't realize that 36% of African American people may equate to 70% of the African American population based on the percent of population that they own. They don't get that. They see, well, what are they griping about? You know, they're getting less hell. They blah blah blah. I mean, that's all they do is make excuses. Now, I want to play this clip for you guys real quick because I want to get this too. Because, you know, one of the other things that white America hears, they hear about the NAACP. They hear about Black History Month. You don't hear about an NAWP. You don't hear about a White History Month. Now, I'm serious. Now, that sounds kind of racist. I understand that. But you think about this, though. That's what the white community has taught. I want you guys to listen to this real quick. This is Morgan Freeman being interviewed by Mike Wallace.
More relaxed. Black History Month, you find ridiculous.
What? You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh,
what do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month?
Oh,
well, come on, tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There is one.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
All right, I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man. And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman. You understand what I know this white guy named Mike Wallace. You know what I'm saying?
Me, Sean, go ahead.
Oh, a very interesting interview. As much as, I mean, and at this point right now, Morgan Freeman got me all twisted because he's a pervert in my eyes right now. So
she's legal age. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh my God, his granddaughter or whatever she was. But anyway, I could understand what Morgan Freeman is saying and everything. But the problem is that you cannot currently say just American history. And I understand what Goldie, because I feel what Goldie talking about when you're talking about you look at the history books and everything, you don't see. You cannot call it American History Month when you don't have everybody that participates. And you cannot call it American history when you got still a tremendous amount of people still looking at Africa as their beginning history and not acknowledging that their history began, I mean, descendants of American slaves began right here. Their history is right here. When they're not participating and understanding that their history, and that's not included in the books, then you really do need a black history, a descendants of slaves, something to bring to reality that. Until that changes about history, then you're going to have people that got to bring up something about themselves. So
I
want to
hear
Goldie
on this.
Hey, Ed, I tell you what, listen, you know what I'm sitting here thinking? I'm just going to keep it real with y'all, man. I'm on a whole different place right now, and I'm going to tell you why. One, it's the same show that we have on Wednesdays, man, so that's what I'm seeing right now. Ain't nobody different on this line. Ain't nobody different who's really chiming in. But one thing I have to say, man, I'm glad that you have Misha on the show, because I really believe now me and Misha can start having better dialogue. And I'm going to tell you why. So many times, you know, Misha, I say something to him, I say, yeah, whatever, Misha. You know what I'm saying? I don't think people really understand our type of relationship, because we go back and forth. And
sure.
And today, man, I'm hearing some things that lets me know, okay, I'm right in my interpretation of what Misha normally is saying that a lot of people don't get. So I'm just glad that you're having this show. I'm a little...
Hey, what did that mean? What did that mean, Sean?
I'm a little saddened by the fact that we don't have any different callers on.
I'm saddened by that as well. But what do you mean when you say...
Wait. But that goes back to what I said earlier. We have been trained through observation and communication with other people to not do certain things in mixed company. It's okay, Misha, we talk about this all the time. It's always the meeting after the meeting, right?
Oh, yeah, always the meeting after the meeting, right, exactly.
If you're in a large black organization, and let's go back to the thing they did, that your boy did with... during the election when he brought Hillary Clinton in there. And he literally called up Tavis Smiley. And they was talking eat black, vote black, breathe black. Who's going to deliver us our blackness? A white woman.
Yeah, he called out Hillary Clinton to come out and speak to
her.
Yeah, that was such an embarrassment.
Let me point this out to Sean real quick, because Sean, you know, we talk about, me and Sean talked at the beginning of the show about what he was taught growing up versus what he was taught later by Sergeant Squeaky, okay? And when you look
at
that, you have to understand this too, you know. Even though my callers, I'm looking at these guys in the queue, they don't want to hit the number one because they don't want their voices to be identified. You got to realize, whites have been taught growing up that we have to keep our mouth shut about anything race-related because we'll be called a racist. So, you know, is that not an equal comparison?
Wait a minute. Hold on, Ed. And I'm going to tell you, but here's the deal. At what point is there a safe zone? Now, there's one thing for you to come on Misha's show, right, coming to the Lions Den, because you know there's going to be me, there's going to be Goldie, but you're going to have some allies and Andy and Rick, but you know there's going to be some folks like me on there, and we may not agree. No, I say that in a bantering type mode. You know, we may not agree, right? So, in essence, you're coming into the Lions Den. But now, this is your show. And again, I'm not being critical. I'm saying you're right. That we all have been growing up and we have taught things as we grow up. For example, blacks feel like we can't say nothing because the same way your white counterparts feel, they can't say nothing. Hell, I feel like I can't say nothing because I'll be the angry black man. Come on, let's keep it all the way real. But that should be a safe zone.
That's that perception, is it not? Is that not the perception, though? And that's what you have to overcome.
No, I'm saying, but at what point do all those listeners that you say are in essence, if you think about it, you're putting them on blast. You just sit there and say, hey, you know, I got these listeners, and they don't want to hit one because they're a little bit reluctant. You, in essence, have put them on blast, and you still don't have, and I'm not trying to put them on blast. I'm just really making a point here that you still don't have someone really willing to step up and say, you know what, I don't know. But, and here's the thing. I think there's a perception of the line that we're thinking that your caller is going to get on the phone and say, I disagree. So who knows? But it may be a situation where they're listening and saying, oh, I ain't got nothing to say because I know that stuff. So, again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm thinking all your callers are.
I totally get it. Yeah. I mean, you know,
the majority of the people in this country that feel that there's a problem with race are the oppressed people. White folks don't see a problem with race. That's why they don't want to talk about it. They don't see a problem with it. And that's just cold, hard fact. You know, they don't see a problem with race, so what do we need to talk about it for?
Goldie,
I was watching Fox one day, right? And when I was watching Fox, I was watching Sean Hannity, because I watch Fox. I like to know what everybody's saying. So I'm watching Sean Hannity, and I'm watching this dude, he's the executive producer of Girlfriends. I can't think of his name, Kramer, I think. But I'm watching this episode, right? And Sean Hannity, you know, they're talking, he says, you know what, man, I don't want the government telling me what I have to do with my taxes. And I'm like, yeah? And I don't want the government telling me what I have to do. And I want to give money to some place, organization, I should be able to do it. So all this stuff he's saying, I'm agreeing with. But then they say, because we all start from the same place. And then that's when I was like, whoa, wait a minute. No, I disagree because we all don't start from the same place. And I framed it up because I think sometimes we just have ideological differences. In other words, I think we all want a better country. I really believe that. But I think it's about how do we get there? How do we have the dialogue to help us get there? And I'm going to tell you, man, again, I probably won't say nothing else on this live because it sounds like to me, we're going back and forth, y'all, but this is the same conversation.
Well,
for myself, it doesn't matter the same conversation or not because it's a different audience and it's an audience that needs to hear the conversation.
I want to address a Goldie.
They're the same guys.
But the audience is different, and they get to hear the
audience is different. But I want to agree to disagree, but to an understanding of what Goldie just said, because I only say that because, and Sean knows this, and Andy knows this. I have a tremendous amount of my European male friends that listen to my show, and I go back to work, and they listen. Ah, me, Sean, I heard what it was. And I ask them, why do you don't call in, okay? Why you don't call in? Engage. Come on, man. Get on. Get. And Sean, remember Sean, one of my guys, he did call in, and we did have one other guy in the early part of this show when I first started. I had him calling in. But then something happened, and we was talking. We sit in the lunchroom in the break area talking, and we got to talking. And this is what came out, man. In a way that what Goldie said is true, but not the sense that they feel totally exactly what Goldie. They don't. For them personally, it doesn't prevent them from doing they day in and day out of accomplishing things that they need to accomplish to take care of their means. Okay, so they have I talked to them. I say because you're born in the privileged skin. Okay, that you don't have to. I say, but unfortunately, like myself, I have to. And I'm going to use what Sean, because I'm starting to realize maybe what Sean said, I use overcome, it may be offensive. But I tell them, look, I've overcome it, but I'm going to start using, I navigate through the racist society that I was born into, not because it ain't racist. It is racist. We got race issues, okay? But you all don't have to navigate through it, okay? And this is what I say. I tell them that you all don't have to overcome it because, no, it's not different. It's not the same, okay? It is not the same. They do not have to.
Listen. Everybody has to navigate through life.
They got to navigate life, but they don't have to navigate the same amount. Right. They don't have to same. They don't have to navigate through the same amount of what we call racism. Okay, as blacks or anybody else that's in a minority, or no, I shouldn't say minority because not just minority, but those who have a different color. Because, see, check this out, and I've not said this. When I was in the military in 78 and we was going through PT training, this is a very revealing thing. At the time, in the early 70s, the late 70s and everything, all minorities, because all of us couldn't, there was Jews, Italians, and all of us was considered minorities, and we joined the military. And we all used to click together in Miami, New York, and everything. But through CT training, common task training, the white sergeants was given a task. All dark black, all black dark males and everything, we was failing the test. We couldn't get past the damn test. We was like, what the hell? What's going on? And this is what my Italian brother said to me. He said, yo, bro, unfortunately, man, it's first glance pass. I said, what the hell is a first glance pass? Okay, what are you talking about? He said, yo, man, when I first walk up, when they first glance at me, I look like I'm unthreatening. I don't look black. So they don't characterize me, and they don't grade me and look at me the same. So initially I get the first pass. He said, unfortunately, bro, when you first walk up and everything, you don't get first or first glance. Let me tell you something. That was an eye opener to every one of the blacks that was in that common task training. And we said, this is what we said. We said, y'all, man, yeah, we can't continue getting no-goes, man. How are we going to overcome that? We learned how to be good, that it became stupid for us to fail us if we was too good. We had to learn the test better than our Italian brothers, better than our Jewish brothers, better than the white man that was taking it. We had to do it better than every person that was in the same line with us just so we can get a go. Okay.
And you think that applies today?
Yeah.
Yep. No, that doesn't apply
times,
the same way today.
How many times have you walked in a job, Ed, and when you walk, you know, most black men on this line, if they'll be honest, they've gone and applied for a job, and in their mind somewhere, they was like, I wonder if they're hiring black folks up there. Everybody has gone.
Hey, look here, hold on.
You know, you said something,
far,
you
talking,
said something.
You're talking to a guy. You're talking to a guy who
and
was a victim,
get,
who was
you,
a victim
you,
of discrimination.
No,
go ahead.
That's not true. That is not true.
That is true.
You can't tell me. You got 15 white supervisors on a job. They got a promotion coming up, and because a white man don't get a job, and they give it to a black man,
I was turned down for promotion because I was a white guy.
No, that's not true. How many other supervisors were there that was white?
That's very true.
Every time a white man don't get a job from a black man, it's always, oh, it's racist. Reverse discrimination. That is not that much crock-a-mess. You can't go into any corporation.
No, actually, in my case, it was very true. I'll tell you the story. Real
okay,
quick.
But what I
want to
say
go off
is, there. Ed Goldie.
Go ahead.
This is the thing and guys, this was said this year. Remember what Barney Frank said about Obama? How he described him. He was an articulate, good-looking black
yes.
man.
Right, exactly.
So, there is still a race component, and I want to say this for the record. I'm not in denial of race. I see race every
right.
day, and I told you this the other day, and I think I told you this, Misha. I have to wake up every day and have to make a conscious decision not to be racist.
Right.
That's a decision I have to make
okay.
every day. Okay.
Yeah.
I realize. But it's resistance out there for me. But I won't give in to that's the thing.
Well, here's the thing. I got to explain this to Goldie. Goldie, I want you to understand, sir. I'm not lying to you. You know, I worked at UPS. I was a supervisor at UPS. They had an area manager spot open. Company policy at the time, written policy was, that you had to be within one semester of your bachelor's degree to be considered for that promotion. I applied anyway. I was 1.5 semesters out from my bachelor's degree. I was the most qualified for that job. I'd run number one in every statistical category UPS had for 5 years running as a supervisor. and I was had the most education. I was denied that promotion. They ended up making two spots. They gave one to a black male and one to a white female. And I asked about that, and I was shown their resumes. The white female had 9 total semester hours of school. She was still a freshman, and she hadn't attended school for the last quarter. The black male had 16 credit hours of school and hadn't attended school for almost a year. When I asked the big boss at UPS why they were promoted against company policy when I should have been promoted based on company policy, I was told that they had to promote them to satisfy the requirements. I was told that point blank by the rich white guy. It's not something I'm making up in my head. I contacted an attorney. You know what the attorney told me? He said I had no case. I said, how do you figure I have no case? At that time, I didn't know many attorneys. I was still green to everything I do now. He said, because you're not a protected class. So I know firsthand about discrimination.
Hey,
I was told that.
Can I give you?
Go ahead.
Can I give you a 2000 and 2006?
Uh-huh.
I drive semis for UPS in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep.
Out of 250 drivers, there was probably 10 black.
Oh,
being another black driver, we saw a problem with that. We went to Lewis Coleman ourselves. Lewis Coleman wrote, and I looked at the letters. He wrote several letters because there was a problem with the hiring practices of black drivers in the city of Louisville. This is 2006.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel bad for your story. I really do.
No,
you know, but in the grand scheme of things,
in
the grand scheme of things, black folks deal with this every day, year in and year out.
You're absolutely
out.
Right. That's why I don't ever make it an issue.
And
I'm just trying to point out.
Right.
The only thing I'm pointing out is I can understand.
But you know what, Ed?
Right.
But Ed, if I can say this, man, you know, at the
real
end
quick,
of the day,
we're running out of time.
I'm done. I ain't even got to say it. I'm enjoying the show, man. So
All right, hey, but let me can I give an ad now, closing, because we're gonna
close
out
right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right then, fellas. I want to thank each and every one of y'all for coming on this show. And Goldie, listen up. Thank you for showing up. Sean, thank you for showing up. As always, thank you for showing up, Andy, and thank you, Ed, for having the show. But I want to let everybody who's on this show. Now, Ricky Jones is going to be on this Wednesday show, okay? Sean, I got Ricky Jones. He called me. He returned my phone call, and we coming to talk about what he want to talk about. And I said, bro, let's talk about race, okay? Let's talk about the very thing that's very controversial and everything. So Ricky Jones is going to be the guest on the Focus Show. For all you that Blog Talk Radio, the Focus Show, me, Sean, come back after 4 weeks. And I'm going to start kick the show off banging with Ricky Jones, the professor from the University of Louisville. Thank you, man.
Thank you for being on me, Sean. Thanks to Goldie, Andy, and Sean for calling in. For the rest of my audience, I understand, you know, the fear of trying to speak out. But that's exactly what this show is all about, trying to overcome those fears, get involved in the discussion, and make things happen. Me, Sean's show is Wednesday at 10 o'clock from 10 to noon. You folks have a great night.
10 a.m.
We're out of time. We'll see you later. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Rob. Later.
And a cold beer on a warm day. Some way I gotta make it happen, cause a dollar is worth nothing if you ain't got more to stack it in. Some say the facts don't lie, well my pockets are empty, my stomach's rumbling and my mouth is dry. Some say others pass by, but it's the ones that pass away that make us wanna stay alive. And so I say I cannot die, not why people rely on me to provide. And yes, I may stray from time to time, but my past always brought me back around to see the brighter side. I pray rainy days will stay away, because my umbrella is broken and the sunshine never stays. And so I lay my heart into every line, because without emotion I'm promoting nothing with these rhymes.
I know it's hard.